the radio waves as we begin to burn it up. We all up in your area like landscape, definitely bringing you the power slam of pancakes. It's the mandate that you tune in. It's time to move out so we can move in and recognize that this is no illusion. I'm here to clear the air so that there is no confusion. It all started off in the book of Genesis when Jacob was wrestling with who he thought was his nemesis. And when the man saw he couldn't overpower him, he touched his hip but he really could have devoured him. And from that point then we hear a name change, rearrange the game, so now we gotta change. So I'm here to let you know it's time to listen to the Pancake and Power Slam Show. Let's go!
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam Show.
Indeed, indeed, indeed. It is the Pancakes and Power Slam Show. We are here once again with you on the Tuesday nights as we do. And as we've been doing, this is episode number 37. It's wonderful. Thank you, everyone, for your support and your continual support as we approach to a monumental episode. We have we are almost at episode 50, 13 more episodes to go for all you math fans out there. But thank you so much, though. 37 episodes. That is wonderful. So weekly episodic radio listening for all the amazing wrestling fans in this great world. So thank you for 37 episodes of support and trivia being answered and many awesome news and continual support. So thank you so much for that. Just like we do always, we have the this week's news. And let's start off with Eric Young re-signing with TNA. This is a really, really good thing for me personally, because Eric Young is one of my favorite wrestlers in TNA. He's actually one of my top favorite wrestlers in TNA. Because I have this thing about people who, I guess it's, this is my type of booking, I guess. Of course, I'm a big fan of fresh faces, just a revolving door of fresh faces every few years or so. But we have to understand, we have to realize that there is, I mean, there's a number of wrestlers on the roster, and so we can't just have everybody be pushed. So there are certain wrestlers that are popular, but they're not necessarily main eventers at their time. Santino Morello is one of those people. He's more of a jobber these days. So I wasn't a big fan of that. Zack Ryder was one of those people for a second. He was a really, really good, solid mid-carder. And his character worked. And that's why I like Eric Young so much, because he's funny. He's absolutely funny. And he's just, his personality, you know, the beard, mountain man look. He's a great wrestler. His music is fun and interactive, and Eric Young, I mean, you know, he's doing his job as far as a character is concerned in TNA. So I'm a big fan of Eric Young. Glad he re-signs, and I wish the best for Eric Young and his TNA tenure. It was reported that there are many final, like, last-minute rewrites at Raw for Vince McMahon. There was in the double digits before just the last number, it wasn't even tallied because of the diminishing ratings. It's still nobody really. I mean, there's so many ways or so many fingers to point at different people. There's so many people to point fingers at. You know, some people say it's because of CM Punk. So many people say it's because of Monday Night Football. So many people say it's because of PG. Like I said before, I like the PG Raw. I like the PG Raw because, I mean, of course, the Attitude Era, I mean, it's the most popular era, the most popular era of the WWE, hands down. I just made a DVD about it. But at the same time, like I said before, cheap heat and cheap pops, you know, it kind of makes the character, it kind of makes less of a character in a sense, because it makes creative's job easier. And I think creative, I think if you're a writer for the biggest company in the biggest wrestling company in the world, you're going to have to be challenged. So honing characters, really, really paying attention to honing characters is a focus in the PG era and should be a focus. And that's what wrestling is really all about. I mean, just really promoting a character like Hulk Hogan. He was larger than life. But yeah, I mean, Attitude Era was definitely a definitive era, and the WWE, it's what launched them to be the biggest entity in wrestling history. But at the same time, I think the PG era is a good transition for many reasons. I mean, of course, you got the sponsors and endorsements and things of that nature. So both eras are needed. So, and then finally, MVP and Shelton Benjamin are considered to as names of returning to the WWE. Shelton Benjamin has been doing pretty good in the Indies, and specifically ROH. He has realigned himself with Charlie Haas's Wrestling's Greatest Tag Team. I'm sure that's because of legal purposes, but a lot of people still, even they just had one of the Briscoes. He actually said World's Greatest Tag Team past episode. So people still say World's Greatest Tag Team. I guess it just comes off the tongue more fluidly, I guess, than Wrestling's Greatest Tag Team. So, yeah, I mean, either way, I think they're decent names. But, of course, World's Greatest Tag Team is more marketable. But yeah, he's been doing that. Actually won the ROH tag team titles a little time after they came back a couple years ago. 2010 is when Benjamin left. MVP left as well around that time, not too far from there. And I think that MVP would definitely be a good hand as far as an upper mid carder for the WWE. He just reached the glass ceiling. Benjamin and himself reached the glass ceiling in the WWE, and they had so much more potential, especially Benjamin. He was one of the best athletes in the WWE, hands down. And so MVP was a good character, had a lot of charisma. I might have asked a MVP related question, but I was going to give a little fun fact, but I think I'm going to save it for a trivia question. So, all right, well, that was this week's news. The flavor of the week this week is pro wrestling's fastest derailed pushes. So wrestlers who had some good pushes, you know, it seems like they had a lot of promise in the beginning of their debut or re-debut as a different character in the WWE, and then all of a sudden it just bombed. So we will approach that. And if anybody has any pushes to think they can think of that went sour really quick, that person I just saw in the chat line, feel free to log into the chat line for trivia and comments. I just saw the Patriot. He's not on my list, but the Patriot is an interesting choice there. But of course, we get to that at the end, the flavor of the week, and we'll get to the first trivia question before we get to Raw. What gimmick was Matt Bourne in WCW? What gimmick was Matt Bourne in WCW. And if you can one-up me and say that and give me his gimmick in the WWE as well. Tweet at Crave Wrestling, just like I do every week. I read tweets, different questions via tweet or different comments via tweet. And then call in live, 347-884-8452. Once again, the first trivia question is, what gimmick was Matt Bourne in WCW? And if you would like to add his WWE gimmick, feel free to say that as well via tweet or the chat room. All right, well, let's go on to Raw for this week. We first start off with a Dolph Ziggler in-ring promo on the ladder. He was on the ladder. Before I go there, I do want to address something real quick. I forgot to mention, speaking of Flavor of the Week, I had a Flavor of the Week a couple weeks ago, about two or three weeks ago, about the pro wrestling deaths for the past 5 years, since 2007. And I am sincerely apologize. I did not mention Bryan Adams. Of course, we know him as Crush, and member of the Nation, member of the DOA, former NWO member, member of Chronic. Definitely, he was a member of Demolition. Died in 2007. So, yeah. Sorry that I did not mention him. He's definitely someone who was worth mentioning as far as that segment of the Flavor of the Week is concerned, for a couple weeks ago. So, you know, of course, Bryan Adams' 2007 death is something that is definitely was very grieving and very sad to see him go at a young age. So, yeah, on Raw, Dolph Ziggler in-ring promo on the ladder. Interrupted by Sheamus and then Big Show. Sheamus shoves Ziggler off the ladder. Vince McMahon coerces Vicky Guerrero to book Sheamus and Ziggler, as well as AJ and Vicky. And then, yeah, I mean, you know, that's I'll tell you what, though. One thing that is pretty interesting is that I initially thought that it was hands down Dolph Ziggler was going to win the Money in the Bank match, but the confidence that I have in that has diminished just a little bit. I don't want to see it. We also have TLC predictions as well, but I don't want to see John Cena win the Money in the Bank, because he had the WWE one, the WWE Championship one, and he lost. I don't even know why he won it. I stressed at that point in time on the show, I think it was just a bad idea. I saw no point in it. But at the same time, it all led to CM Punk heel turn, and I mean, it was one of the causes of the heel turn. So I mean, but at the same time, it just made no sense. It was just and I guess it was just a marketable thing for the 2000. The 1,000th episode of Raw, because Cena cashed it in at that point of time. But at the same time, I don't know. We'll talk about that come predictions time. R-Truth defeats Wade Barrett. I see on the chat room, Doink is correct for the WWE one, but the question was initially for WCW. So, yeah, if you would like to tweet or the chat room, Matt Bourne and WCW, what gimmick was he? I'm happy that R-Truth defeated Waybear. I like both R-Truth and Waybear, but at the same time, to me, it just seems like they're trying to gain momentum for R-Truth to lose against Cesaro. Thank you, everyone, for continuing to log in the chat room. Be sure to hang tight. And like I said, we will be doing trivia. And the current question now is, what gimmick was Matt Bourne in WCW? So feel free to answer that. But, yeah, it just seems like R-Truth is just being built up for the purposes of just Cesaro. I mean, Antonio Cesaro just getting more momentum to see a good Antonio Cesaro win. I don't see Cesaro not having the U.S. title for any time, you know, for any of the foreseeable future. So, but we'll get to that when we get to the predictions. But I think it's a good idea to build momentum for the challenger. It also makes the champion more worthy. It makes the win bigger if you build momentum for the challenger. So the non-title wins that R-Truth has had over Cesaro, as well as the win that he's had against Waybear, is a good idea. I think it's a good idea. Big Josh is the answer for Matt Bourne in WCW. Next question is, who was the last WCW champion while the company existed? Who was the last WCW champion while the company existed? Might have asked that before, but I will ask it again because I don't think anyone got that right last time I asked. Who was the last WCW champion while the company existed? So the last Nitro, who was the champion? Kofi splashes Baird post match. It's a good way to set up for the Intercontinental title match between Baird and Kofi Kingston. We saw Cody Rhodes come back. Team Rhodes Scholars defeats Primetime Players, Primo and Epico, and the Usos in a tag team elimination match. I don't know if I've ever experienced this, but what's so interesting is that the winning team faces Mysterio and Sin Cara at TLC. I don't think I've ever, and I've been watching wrestling all of my life, I don't recall. I may have missed one or two, or just kind of overthinking it, or not. It's not being recalled. But I don't ever recall a tag team elimination match or elimination match in general to face another challenger to face the champions at a later date. I just don't remember that. It was a bit odd, but I think it was pretty predictable. I didn't see anybody not winning other than Road Scholars. They were trying to push them pretty hard before Cody's injury, so it was pretty much a done deal for me. Eve defeats Alicia Fox. Alicia Fox just goes back and forth from face to heel just so much. And they just needed someone else to defeat Eve. Once again, Divas Division in WWE is just horrible. There's only a few wrestlers that are worthy of even looking at as far as an athletic point of view. And they really need to do a major overhaul in the Divas Division very quickly, because every single week, I mean, there's no type of angle. The whole Nancy Kerrigan thing just bombed. It ended up being Oksana, and the way that they ended that was just horrible. And so they just need some type of direction with the Divas Division right now. Once again, who was the last WCW champion while the company existed? Chat room, tweet, or call in live in front of a nationwide audience, 347-884-8452. Absolutely. I got a tweet that said Booker T. That is the correct answer. Great job. Next, we got CM Punk and Paul Heyman cuts a promo on top of the ramp. A very good promo. Just CM Punk and Paul Heyman together is just an amazing idea. They just really gel together. Just a very, very good tandem. Great promo cutters. Both of them are just phenomenal promo cutters. And I think that's just promo cutting segments, period, works for them too, because he's injured. CM Punk is injured, but at the same time, just coming out and cutting a promo about his injury worked. So that was even a good segment in and of itself. So hats off to CM Punk and Paul Heyman for that. Sheamus defeats Dolph Ziggler by disqualification. I wasn't expecting a clean victory with either one of those, just because of leading to the pay-per-view. It just made sense for it to be not a clean victory. Throwaway match of the week. I usually have one of these every week, and this was the throwaway match of the week. I think for some odd reason, if I can recall the previous weeks, most of them, I don't remember when I started this. It's probably, I'm sure it's been about 3 weeks or so, maybe even longer, that I've coined the throwaway match of the week. And I think that Alberto Del Rio has been in most of them. So he's in this one. He beats Zack Ryder. No purpose, no point. Another Zack Ryder loss. What's new? Vicky defeats AJ. Interesting swerve, though. Brad Maddox comes out as a referee. AJ has Vicky for the pin and screws AJ out of a win, and Vicky rolls up AJ. I think this is a good direction. I think using Brad Maddox in this capacity could actually work out for him, because the initiation matches, or you have to beat this person to get a contract, you know, that got pretty stale. It was with Ryback and with Randy Orton, and I didn't see either of them having a chance of losing at all. But slithering his way into a contract this way and assisting Vicky Guerrero, who gets, you know, the biggest heat in the WWE for years, this would garner even more heat for Maddox, and I think this is a good idea. This actually even may work more than CM Punk, because Vicky Guerrero gets more heat than CM Punk does. Next question is, who was Bobby Eaton's partner before Stan Lane, the Midnight Express? Who was Bobby Eaton's partner before Sweet Stan Lane? For all of my old-school traditional wrestling fans, we've had some answers on the chat room, and we've had some tweets, so continue to do one of those avenues. Got a question here on a tweet here. It says, can WWE pair Brock Lesnar with Punk and Heyman, even with Brock doing his legitimacy stick, or does Brock need to stay away? Very good question. Brock Lesnar needs to stay away, in my opinion. I think that I initially was a big fan of a new type of dangerous alliance, with CM Punk and Maddox and a couple other NXT people. Ambrose was another idea that I thought of before the Shield. I think that if Brock Lesnar wants to be with Heyman, it doesn't need to be an alliance type of deal. It needs to be Paul Heyman separately manages CM Punk, because they're just so good, as a two-person unit. And this even it makes me even think about how I was, you know, such a proponent of a stable, but since we have the Shield, you know, maybe a stable, a Heyman stable wouldn't be the best idea in the world, unless you bring in the Shield to help out CM Punk for the purposes of keeping the title on Punk, so he'll have an asterisk, you know, with his title reign. So I can see that, but as far as just throwing people with Heyman now, I don't think it'll work as good as it potentially could have, just because CM Punk and Paul Heyman is just so good, you know, with the two of them. So Brock Lesnar would kind of break it up a little bit, because Heyman, you know, he just adulates CM Punk so much. I mean, the reigning and defending WWE champion, you know, the best in the world. So he has all of these, you know, accolades for Punk, and he does a really, really good job giving him adulation. So I think it would work if Brock Lesnar stays away from Heyman for a while and don't come back until probably Elimination Chamber or something of that nature, while CM Punk is already established enough with Heyman. So, you know, and of course they can, you know, develop an angle to have Brock Lesnar come back in a decent way. Dennis Condrey, great job in the chat room. Very good job. And before we go forward with the last few moments of Raw, we have our esteemed Raw correspondent returning from assignment. Derek, the floor is yours, sir.
Hey, well, I got your back when you say CM Punk and Heyman are a good team. I'm not a CM Punk fan, but I understand how you get that. I mean, it keeps Raw going. It keeps some of the storylines kind of fresh a bit. But yeah, I'm not a CM Punk fan, but I can see on an outside perspective why people watch him and want to get behind him. And you said the worst match is Alberto Del Rio. I disagree. I think any Divas match is probably the worst match. That was the Divas division has totally gone downhill. Not that it was ever that spectacular to begin with back in the day, but some, you know, it had a little bit of excitement, but now it's just kind of flat, and they just need to do something to spice that up. Women's wrestling has never been as exciting. I don't want to sound bad about it, but it can be good. It was good in the day. They just need to be, I think, better athletes than supermodels. The Shield adds so much more seriousness to Raw. I like The Shield a lot. They make me, they kind of remind me of the NWO, minus all the glamour the NWO had, but it kind of is a knit group that kind of invades the common structure of Monday Night Raw, SmackDown, what have you. But I'm behind them. They've impressed me a lot, and I hope that it doesn't get stale, kind of like how the Ryback just, he was so super awesome, and now he's lost so many times. It's kind of redundant, but I think the Shield has a lot to prove, but I think they have a lot to show. And back to you.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Derek. Great job, as always. Just to clarify, I didn't think that the Del Rio and Ronda match was the worst match. And he's right. I mean, every Divas match is the worst match of the night. But it was a throwaway match of the week that I usually have that just meant nothing. It was just a random match that had absolutely nothing. And, you know, I'll definitely ration with the fact that the Divas match could have been a qualifier for that too. But at least it showcases the Divas. You know, they're kind of like their separate brand, so to speak. So it kind of showcases the Divas, but a random match between Alberto Del Rio and Zack Ryder is just absolutely pointless. So 347-884-8452 is the number to call. Tweet at Crave Wrestling for any questions or any opinions on Raw or SmackDown or TNA or ROH. log into the chat room for the next question, which is who was the sixth member of the NWO? Who was the sixth member of the NWO? Next, we get Antonio Cesaro defeats Kofi Kingston. I also think that this is a good idea. They're building, I mean, they're kind of doing a slow but methodic build for Cesaro, and I like it. Like I say a lot, I liked him when he was Claudio Castagnoli in the Indies and ROH. Big fan of the Kings of Wrestling with Chris Hero, who is now Cassius Ohno in NXT. But when Cesaro came, when he was with Oksana, I wasn't as big of a fan as I was when he was Castagnoli. I don't know. And then when Oksana left, I didn't think that was a good idea because I think that she was a good addition. But at the same time, I think him breaking off, in hindsight, I think him breaking off was, in fact, a good idea because he really gets to showcase his skills more. And I think a win against Kofi was a good idea. However, it's just like I've said before and like I've said to other people, you know, with discussions, the neutralizer finisher is just a weird finisher to me. I don't think it's a marketable finisher, so to speak. I wasn't a big fan of of just the execution of it. And just, he just kind of slowly pulls you up, and it's just really weird. So I'm not a big fan of it at all. I really, he in ROH, he did the, and he's done it in WWE, he's done the kind of throw you up and just the European uppercut. It's very potent looking finisher, so... got some answers via tweet, none of them correct yet. The answer is in the question, honestly. I'm going to give you a hint there. Who was the sixth member of the NWO? Yeah. I think Kofi Kingston, he wins and he loses, so it wasn't a big deal that he lost, so... then we get to Miz TV with special guest Team Rhodes Scholars. That was pretty interesting. Talked about Miz's suit, but actually I didn't think it looked too bad, honestly. It kind of fit him. Miz gravitating as a face is such a great idea. I just really, really, really like it. And I think that Miz versus CM Punk would definitely be a very sellable match. And I don't know. I understand that The Rock, is setting up for, Royal Rumble when he came in. I know the Royal Rumble's probably the second biggest, I would say that it's the second biggest pay-per-view of the year. And I understand that they really wanted to push the Royal Rumble, but honestly, The Miz versus CM Punk for the Royal Rumble would have been a lot more intriguing to me as far as giving The Miz a shot, because you have to understand that, and I've said this many times before and wrote in articles and seen other articles about this too throughout. Basically from now to April is a lock concerning the WWE Championship. It's just, they're thinking about having Ryback. There's a monumental Raw, the 20-year Raw episode will be on January the 14th, and so that's the Raw that they're you know, thinking about having Ryback have his rematch against CM Punk. I mean, that's just so close to the Royal Rumble, so I really don't see how unpredictable that is. So I just don't. It's pretty much a lock, and you know, just having Ryback, you know, have another title shot against CM Punk, and by no means do I see Ryback winning the title and going against The Rock at the Royal Rumble. Ryback is they're honing him as a face, and he would get booed out the arena going against The Rock. So that definitely wouldn't be a good idea. So just having him as champion, I mean, the only thing that I can think of is just having Ryback be champ for a week. And would that even, I mean, would that even be a point? Would that blemish his career even more? You know what I mean? So it's just the questions that you have to think of continuing this Ryback and CM Punk feud. You know, it just doesn't make much sense. So, X-Pac's Sean Waltman 6 was his name in NWO. Any of those were acceptable, and that was the correct answer. So, great job. Next question is, who has been eliminated the quickest in the Royal Rumble? Speaking of the Royal Rumble, who was the fastest elimination ever in the Royal Rumble? Just recently, that happened, and if anybody wants to say the second longest, who the person beat, that would be nice little knowledge trivia points there as well. So we'll go on to Cena and Big Show. Cena defeats Big Show by disqualification. Cena then attacked by the Shield. Team Hell No, The Shield, Sheamus, Ziggler, Big Show, Cena, Ryback, they all fight in the ring. They all come out at different times, and just a big old fracas at the end before it goes off. So that's basically what the creative staff came up with. But I will be honest with you. I think this was a for a go-home Raw. I think this one, I think admittedly, this is one of the best go-home Raws of the year, because it just really kind of it really developed the angles just more crisply, I guess you can say. And I think that it did a good job with just really sectioning off, you know, really, you know, the angle's really good by having different matches and things of that nature. The ending was a bit weird, but at the same time, I think all in all, not too bad of a go-home show leading into the TLC pay-per-view. Next question, like I said, who was the fastest elimination in Royal Rumble history? And if you want to one-up me on that, who did he beat? I might be stumping some people. All the tweets that I get and all the people who comment on chat room, there is no. I'm looking at a tweet and a answer in the chat room. Neither of them are correct. So, all right. So on to SmackDown. Booker T orders Big Show and Sheamus to sign a no-contact clause. Big Show turns over a table on Sheamus before he signs it, and firing up Sheamus. And then Booker T makes matches of Sheamus and Alberto Del Rio and Big Show and Daniel Bryan. What's the interesting thing about that is that, you know, Alberto Del Rio, he booked that one pretty good. You know, I'll have some Sheamus, I have someone to I have someone for you to take your steam off on Alberto Del Rio. You know, I was like, okay, well, that's a good way to book a match. And they said, well, Big Show, you get Daniel Bryan. And I'm like, oh, okay, well, that's not intimidating. So it would seem if he wanted to be intimidating, I would think more of a Kane or a Great Khali. We got Daniel Bryan. So, and then, of course, Big Show defeats Daniel Bryan, which was pretty much expected and predicted. So, Big Show, and then Daniel Bryan gets distracted by the Shield, and they attack Daniel Bryan post-match. Just random attacks. I can understand Kane, Daniel Bryan, but Randy Orton, The Miz, and now John Cena, I don't know. I mean, does those three people, you know, are they the next three people that, go against the Shield? You know, is that a six-man Orton, Miz, and Cena against the Shield at Royal Rumble? I mean, it could be a possibility. It'll be a marketable match. Then we saw Kane tries to make the save, but gets outnumbered and powerbombed through announcer's table. Damon Sandow quizzes someone from the crowd again. Those got pretty monotonous. I'm glad that Cody Rhodes came back. Miz comes out after the challenge and cuts a promo on Sandow. Talked about Victoria's Secret tights. Pretty good. I actually would also like a Miz and Damon Sandow feud. Miz as a face just opens up so many possibilities for him. I mean, there's just a number of heels, at least a handful of heels that he can get into a pretty good feud with. Cesaro's another one that would work out for the U.S. title. So Miz as a face is a great idea. 3MB defeats Brodus Clay and Usos. Tell you what, 3MB was just horrible to me in the beginning, but I will admit, okay, I'm going to go out and admit, in the midst of probably some adversity, that 3MB is growing on me. I am buying into the 3MB hype. I listened to the theme song before the show, I guess as a igniter, so to speak, and I'm actually going to write an article on Bleach Report about the best theme songs of 2012, and I'm going to spoil it and let you know that 3MB will be one of those. So I don't know. I don't know why 3MB is growing on me, but they're still cheesy. And still weird gimmicks for Drew McIntyre. And Jinder Mahal, in a sense, but Jinder Mahal was just doing next to nothing anyways. They try to have him being involved with Ryback for a second. That didn't last long, but so it was a good spot for him. I still don't know about Drew McIntyre, honestly. I would have picked Curt Hawkins instead of Drew McIntyre. Just because I think that Drew McIntyre deserves to have a single spot on the roster, but based on where he was, just a relative nobody after having an amazing push. Talking about the flavor of the week here, I guess it's a decent spot for him, seeing where he was. Randy Orton defeats Wade Barrett, renewed rivalry there. Good match. Great Khali and Hornswoggle defeats Primo and Epico. I don't understand this Khali and Hornswoggle teaming. They're actually wrestling. I mean, I can understand Hornswoggle coming out for Khali during his matches, but, I mean, what are they throwing their hats in the tag team division now or what? I just don't understand the point of having Hornswoggle and Khali, actually wrestle. So, no correct answer so far concerning the quickest elimination in Royal Rumble history. I guess I will give a hint. I mean, all the thousands of people that listen to this show and all the great interaction we get through Twitter and chat room. No answer correctly yet. So I'll give a hint. This person had a miracle in Milan. How about that? I think that's pretty easy. Pretty good enough hint there. Antonio Cesaro in-ring promo, interrupted by R-Truth. Cuts a promo on the ramp, gets some cheap pops with the USA chants. Eventually walks down to the ring and scuffles with Cesaro. Good building. I mean, it's a good – I'm liking the mid-card title build now. I mean, beforehand, when Cesaro won, I mean Zack Ryder, when he won, that was a good idea. And then Swagger beat him. And then Santino beats Swagger, and then it just bombed after Swagger and Santino. So Cesaro beating Santino was a good idea. But he was still kind of wrestling random matches. But they're doing a good job building this feud with R-Truth. Don't see R-Truth winning. I guess that kind of gave my answer for the match at TLC. But at the same time, I do think that it's a very good build of a feud. Then finally, Sheamus defeats Brother Del Rio. Good match between them two. Big Show bribes Sheamus to hit him, but Sheamus throws Ricardo Rodriguez into his groin area instead. So, Miracle in Milan. Milan Miracle. He actually has I think his tweet handle is at Milan Miracle. So, pretty easy one to me, but I guess people don't keep statistics up like I do. Then we'll go into TNA Impact Wrestling leading into Final Resolution. 347-884-8452 is the number to call to be live on air in front of a national audience. Pancakes and Power Slam show here every week. Thanks so much for tuning in and tweeting and logging into the chat room and listening. Impact Wrestling, Bobby Roode and Christopher Daniels and Kazarian in ring. Daniels call out AJ Styles. AJ tackles Daniels and gets jumped by Roode and Kazarian. Hardy and Storm make the save. D-Von defeats Samoa Joe. They've become the new TV champion. It was pretty much inevitable to me. I pretty much, because of the Ace and Nate's hype and because of the, D-Von's never lost the TV title, it was pretty inevitable to me that D-Von was going to win the title. So I was predicting that. And I'm actually not a proponent of it. I think it was a good idea. Just to give Ace and Nate some type of steam because it's diminishing to me. The Ace of the Nates concept was really good initially, but now I'm really losing interest in Aces and Eights. They need to, and I keep reiterating this, they need to keep revealing people. People in a mask every week, anti-establishment. The only people we know are, as a public, the only people the public knows is D-Von and Doc or Luke Gallows. But me, being a journalist, I know, other identities that I won't spoil. But at the same time, they just need to reveal more people. They have to reveal more people. I'm totally getting disinterested in Aces and Eights. And there's even talk about having a big role in the Marches. They're one of their biggest pay-per-views of the year, which is Lockdown in March. And so basically that's, three more months of Aces and Eights. So they need to do some more creative ideas with Aces and Eights. Al Snow and D'Lo talk backstage. I think this is leading to something. Just hang tight. I'll say that. Hang tight with seeing Al Snow and D'Lo mingle with each other and it's going to develop something in the near future. Mickie James in-ring promo interrupted by Tara. Velvet Sky returns to a pretty big pop. Chavo Guerrero and Hernandez defeats Robbie and Robbie T, distracted by Joey Ryan, attacked by Matt Morgan in post-match. Angle defeats Doc by DQ, run in by Ace of the Nates. Briscoe, Bischoff, Samoa Joe makes the save, sets up the 4-8-man match between Ace of the Nates against Briscoe, Bischoff, Samoa Joe, and Kurt Angle. Hogan and Bully Ray talk in Hogan's office. Bully Ray demands match against Aries. Hogan rejects initially. James Storm and Jeff Hardy talk backstage. Another one of those weird Jeff Hardy voices moments. That's just so weird to me. I just don't understand that. I don't understand who came up with that idea. And, yeah, it's just, I mean, I guess the whole Creatures of the Night thing, and he's supposed to have, you know, the whole paint on the eyelids. And, I mean, I understand that. You know, it's different, it's unique. But this voices thing is just, I mean, I don't know. I'm not buying it. Next we get to Kenny King defeating Zema Ion and Kid Cash to have the number one contender, to win the number one contender of the X Division title. Great idea. I was waiting for them to use Kenny King in a prominent role again. So I'm glad that he won the match. Santino Marella was the correct answer for the Royal Rumble, quick as elimination. And he defeated a long-standing record of the Warlord. Warlord came in the Royal Rumble and posed and turned around and got clotheslined out by the immortal Hulk Hogan. So interesting little history lesson there. What was Taz's catchphrase in ECW? What was Taz's catchphrase in ECW? Bully Ray, Austin Aries, Hulk Hogan, and Brooke Hogan in-ring segment. Hulk Hogan eventually grants Bully and Aries match. And then we saw Hardy, Storm, and AJ defeat Kazarian, Daniels, and Rude. Aces and Nate's post-match attack on Hardy. They gave them thumbs up to Rude, so Bobby Rude paid Aces and Eights to beat up on Hardy, setting up for the match at Final Resolution. Then going on to Final Resolution, James Storm defeats Kazarian. RVD defeats Kenny King. Good match there. Chavo and Hernandez defeats Matt Morgan and Joey Ryan by DQ. Austin Aries defeats Bully Ray. Some interference there. Tara defeats Mickie James. Kurt Angle, Garrett Bischoff, Wes Briscoe, and Samoa Joe defeat Aces and Eights. Daniels defeats AJ in their last match. Daniels could finally say that he has he has AJ's number. Very nice Styles Clash reverse and executed by Daniels. Daniels just continues to be one of my favorite wrestlers, period. I follow him in the indies for a while, and he was in ROH as well. So very, very good wrestler. He's definitely one of my favorites. And then finally, Jeff Hardy defeats Bobby Roode. Aces and Nates come in, and Roode assumes that they are helping him, but they attack him as well. Don't really understand the point of that. I'm hoping that they don't turn Bobby Roode a face. I don't think that that's a good idea. And I also hope that they don't do the Aces and Eights versus TNA. Because, interesting enough, Derek, our Raw correspondent, mentioned the NWO without the glitz and glamour, so to speak, and it described the Shield as that. What's interesting about that is that the glitz and glamour really messed up the NWO. I just recently purchased the NWO DVD, and I watched that in its entirety. And By the way, it's a good DVD to add to your collection, but I wasn't totally satisfied. I think it should have been a lot more, footage of the NWO. The first DVD was a really good DVD. What the WWE usually do, a lot of talking, a lot of people, a lot of interviews, and then matches and subsequent discs, which is, you know, a good format by the WWE DVD promotions. But at the same time, the matches that were chosen, they were okay, but I think that a few other matches should have been chosen. Just a personal opinion about that. But otherwise, I would definitely recommend it. It's a good DVD to add to your collection. Other DVDs I recently watched was the Undertaker 20-0. DVD was really good, and the WrestleMania, Creation of WrestleMania DVD that was made. So good DVDs to add to the collection. Attitude Era DVD would be next, most likely, in my DVD collection set. Call a caller here. State your name, what city you're from, and your thoughts.
Hi, my name is Jesse from Green Bay.
Hey, Jesse.
And I just wanted to comment on the NWO DVD. I don't have that yet, but I really want to get it. And I can kind of see your thoughts on it. If and in my opinion, what was the matches that were missing from that DVD? And what's your phase on the NWO as far as what did they represent to you? How did you like them? I personally purchased the Attitude Era DVD not too long ago, and to me, that was probably the best DVD I've ever seen in my life. As far as wrestling goes, it had everything as far as the Stone Cold and the Rock, but I have yet to see the NWO DVD. I know they came out at the same time, and if you haven't seen the WWE Attitude Era, you should really see that and compare it to what you think of the NWO DVD, but I want to know, as far as the NWO, what was your favorite moment of that? And that was such an awesome time in wrestling. And how can wrestling repair itself from what it is now to make it what it was back then as far as the spontaneous excitement that you had every Monday night?
All right. Thank you, Jesse. Appreciate that call there. The NWO DVD was really, really good. I appreciated the candor of the DVD because they pumped it up a lot initially, and then they talked about the demise of the NWO, you know, with the Wolfpack as far as subjectively. Something that they said that I totally agree with was just adding so many people in the NWO. And it just became ridiculous how, I mean, it was just everybody. I mean, you had Horace Hogan, Stevie Ray, you had Michael Wall Street. I mean, you know, the list goes on as far as just random members of the NWO, Vincent. Or Virgil, whatever you want to call them, just random members. I think it got up to almost 20 members at one time, and that was just ridiculous. I mean, it just got to the point where Bischoff was just going. I mean, he saw the ratings, and, you know, he was getting fives and sixes. I mean, that's unheard of as far as wrestling ratings are concerned. Usually, getting a two rating these days is a really good, but fives and sixes is amazing. So Bischoff saw that, and he really didn't know how to slow down just the fast stallion of the NWO, and he didn't have his hands on the reins as much as he should have. He just kind of let the horse just keep going. instead of controlling it and just bridling it in the way that it should have been. And just the overage of members was just really a demise, and so that was a really good point that was brought up. And, of course, they showed footage with that. The War Games match, I think, was dumb that they had at Fall Brawl. I believe it was 98. Okay, so here's the concept. This was one of the matches that they showed. It was a three-team match. It was nine people, three-team match for, and the concept this time was the number one contenders, the winner was the number one contender of Goldberg's title. Goldberg had the title at that time. And so it was Team WCW, which was Roddy Piper, DDP, and Warrior against Team Hollywood, which was Hulk Hogan, Bret Hart, and Stevie Ray against Team Wolfpack, which was Sting, Lex Luger, and Kevin Nash. Now, in typical War Games, it was, you know, usually 5-on-5, 4-on-4, 5-on-5. Two teams go together. You know, it was just two teams. They fight against each other, and then, you know, pinfall, submission, and one team wins. But just the booking, the creative direction of this War Games was just absolutely awful. And I remember back in 98 seeing this, and it was just a terrible idea. It was every man for himself, so people can fight within their teams, and so one person won eventually to become the number one contender. So what is the point of having teams if those team members are going to fight against each other? Like, that's the same thing as saying, okay, so a 5-on-5 Survivor Series team is every man for himself. It just makes no sense at all. So that was a really stupid concept. As far as a match that I felt that should have been on there, I believe that Goldberg and Hogan from Nitro should have been on there. Of course, it depicted the NWO losing. It was definitely a really, really good monumental NWO moment. So, you know, so definitely for that. So, and finally, as far as what they could do to promote something up. As far as they can do to promote something these days, I think, here's the thing. They have the ideas that they have could work. For instance, the Nexus in 2010, amazing idea. However, you know, the booking made it just bomb. It was terrible. You had a bunch of NXT guys who were relatively unknown come out. It was up to, I believe, like seven of them at one point in time. Great idea, but it was just horrible, horrible booking. So, wasn't a big fan of it at all as far as the creative direction. So, and honestly, I can see that with the Shield, too. I mean, they're just randomly attacking people. The Shield coming out was a good idea, but just the direction of it may not be suitable to the satisfaction of the WWE Universe. So I think I don't think that the Monday Night Wars era will ever be revived. Let me be sure to say that now. It's unfortunate, but WWE needed that type of competition. And I don't see any promotion giving them that type of competition in maybe in my lifetime. So, I hope that's not the case, but I don't see it in the foreseeable future at all. I mean, the number two company is TNA, and they can't even hold WWE's, sour wrestling tights and boots bags. So, and it's that's unfortunate because TNA's got some potential, but not even remotely close to WWE as far as product, as far as entertainment value. And that's saying a lot because WWE is not the best, and they haven't been very good as far as a company, as far as satisfying the pulse of the viewers for quite some time. But, I mean, they are the entity. So TNA, unfortunately, I mean, they've had some good direction. 2012 was probably the best year of TNA. 2011 was good, too, but 2012 was probably the best. I've watched just about every pay-per-view of TNA in 2012, and I think that there was a good direction. But the WWE needs competition, and they just need to stick with one really big angle. I mean, they had the corporation back in the day. You know, you had the corporate ministry. You had, a DX. So maybe something like that. Maybe a new age, big notable faction. I mean, they even 10 years ago, 2003, Evolution formed, and that was a good deal for the WWE at the time. Evolution was a good faction, so they need something like that to have some type of resemblance of 15 years ago. Otherwise, you'll just be disappointed every Raw and every pay-per-view. So, great questions. Thank you for your call, Jesse. Anybody else want to call? 347-884-8452. Got a tweet. He was just another victim. I'll accept that. His more notable one was "Beat Me If You Can, Survive If I Let You." But just another victim is acceptable. Next question is who has the most Intercontinental title reigns in WWE history, and how many? Who has the most Intercontinental title reigns in WWE history, and how many? All right, we'll go on to Ring of Honor before we go to the Flavor of the Week and the TLC predictions. Bobby Fish and Kyle O'Reilly defeats the Bravado Brothers. I'm liking the Bobby Fish and Kyle O'Reilly tag team there. For those who don't, who missed ROH or depend on my recaps or not familiar, Bobby Fish came in. He's like a dual athlete. He does a couple sports. Good wrestler. He was brought in by Eddie Edwards and Kyle O'Reilly and Davey Richards. He came as a face a couple weeks ago. Cut a promo, and then there was a segment where Davey Richards and Kyle O'Reilly, Davey Richards apologized to Kyle O'Reilly because he had a brief heel turn when he was feuding with Kevin Steen last year, and he was kind of getting booed, and so it kind of earlier this year, kind of caused a heel turn, and so he apologized to Kyle O'Reilly because Kyle O'Reilly turned heel on Davey Richards as well. So, but Bobby Fish comes out a couple weeks ago, and so there was some scuffle between Kyle O'Reilly and Davey Richards because O'Reilly doesn't accept his apology. Bobby Fish comes out and helps O'Reilly and turns heel. And sides with O'Reilly, so they're a team now, and I actually like they have some chemistry. So great job! They defeat the Bravado Brothers. Jay Lethal defeats Chris Silvio. Jay Lethal's rugged type of heelish face character is actually getting him more pops. Jay Lethal is my favorite wrestler in ROH. Loved him in TNA, in the Indies. He's my favorite in ROH, and so I'm glad that they're kind of slowly giving him a revived character as well as a subsequent push that followed that. Kevin Steen defeats Mike Bennett. Good match between them. It's kind of weird to me how they booked the heel versus the heel championship match for the main event. I'm just not a really big fan of heel versus heel matches. Big face versus face matches work most of the time, but heel versus heel matches just kind of weird to me. So, all in all, not a bad pay-per-view leading up to the final battle internet pay-per-view on this Sunday, actually, the 16th. So, for those who follow ROH, which I recommend you should, check out that final battle pay-per-view, and should be good. Hoping for the CNC Wrestling Factory, which is Caprice Coleman Alexander, but it's CNC, one first name and one last name, so. That's actually my favorite tag team right now in TNA. I'm sorry, in ROH, and I hope that they get an opportunity to become the tag team champions this Sunday on the final battle pay-per-view. El Generico will be back as well. He's going to challenge Kevin Steen for the title. El Generico is probably my second favorite ROH wrestler. But he's not a consistent wrestler. As far as someone who's consistent wrestler, I would probably put Michael Elgin up there. That's my guy. I like Michael Elgin a lot. Jay Lethal is going against Rhino. Matt Hardy is going against the television champion there in a match. Adam Cole. It should be a good pay-per-view this Sunday, the final battle. All right, let's go to the flavor of the week, which is pro wrestling's fastest derailed pushes. Once again, real quick, the trivia question is who has the most intercontinental championship reigns in WWE history, and how many? As you can see, I like stats, and I would hope that someone likes stats with me. So, all right. So these are a number of I have nine here. Yeah. So actually, ten. I'm sorry. Well, I have ten. So we'll go with 10. It's not in any particular order. It's just 10 really bad pushes. So like I said, someone who, you know, debuted a character was bound to have some type of upper mid card to main event push, but just absolutely bombed. So let's start off with, the one and only Tensai. Came from, I still don't understand this. I mean, he was doing so well in Japan as Giant Bernard. The team with him and Carl Anderson was just amazing. I saw many matches between with the two teaming. They were called Bad Intentions in Japan, and Carl Anderson is actually doing really good as a face in Japan right now. I really like Carl Anderson's wrestling style. Meshed well with Giant Bernard, was his name at the time. I mean, he had some good matches with Lesnar, had some good matches with Angle. And just unfortunately, I guess the money. I guess it was the money, because I would have stayed as Giant Bernard. I mean, But the way that he was getting pushed initially, defeating CM Punk and John Cena, it seemed like they were going to do something. But he, I mean, the Albert chance, I mean, it was just a gimmick that was just doomed from the beginning. I mean, Tensai just was horrible. It just didn't work. So I don't, you know, he's a jobber now. So I don't think that he'll, as Tensai, if he gets repackaged, it may work, but he may be heading to Japan real soon. Sylvester Turkai. I don't know if anybody remembers Sylvester Turkai, but he had some. He came in. He was a blip, basically. He was managed by Elijah Burke. He was a sambo wrestler, MMA type of guy. You know, he won just about every match. And after that, I mean, it was just nothing. He just kind of fell off the face of the earth as far as the WWE is concerned. Elijah Burke stayed around and was with the New Breed and ECW. But Turkai, I mean, yeah, he was just absolutely nobody. After a short time of having a push. Next, we'll go to Mordecai. Mordecai, this guy. He was a heel. I never understood this. Mordecai, you know, comes from the Bible. You know, I'm an avid Bible reader. And Mordecai is not a villain in the Bible. So I don't understand how I just didn't get the, I mean, I guess he was more, because, you know, Mordecai, which was, became a different gimmick in the ECW, which was a lot. He became Kevin Thorne. It was a lot better than Mordecai, but it was more like a Pharisaic type of thing. You know, I'm going to eliminate your sins and stuff like that, and somehow that was supposed to be villainous, I guess, maybe because it was seemed Pharisaic. I don't know. I don't get it. I think he had his initial match. I think it was Scotty Too Hotty beat. I think he had a short feud with supposed to be Eddie Guerrero, and they were basically building him up for the Undertaker. Absolutely horrible. I mean, he didn't last long at all, and rightfully so. I mean, he wore all white and had like some type of platinum blonde hair. Came out with this symbol looking, with a sword, the symbol, some type of Excalibur, you know, drive it, and he kind of drove it down on this spot in the on the aisleway. It was absolutely horrible. I mean, if anybody don't remember Mordecai, YouTube Mordecai, 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 and check him out on YouTube. You would just be nauseated. Drew McIntyre, I put him on here just because he was the chosen one. You know, Vince McMahon came out and on an episode of SmackDown. Vince McMahon hardly ever appears on SmackDown, but he comes out on SmackDown and talks about how he's the chosen one and all of that. He quickly became the Intercontinental Champion and was really a dominant figure. And then just, I mean, I think it was a feud with either R-Truth or Kofi Kingston that just was really his demise. R-Truth, it was someone who beat him. Kane, that's who it was. Kane beat him like a couple times. And then after that, that was just his demise. Like it was just really, really bad there. I mean, he joined 3MB, you know, a few months ago, and you know, it's some type of resurgence of his character. But Drew McIntyre now compared to Drew McIntyre of like 2009 or so, 2010. Wow. it was awful, an awful comparison. At least there's something going on with him right now, but up to a few months ago, it was just horrible. Vladimir Kozlov is someone I put on here as well. I mean, he became tag team champions with Santino Marella. However, just I mean, this guy beat the Undertaker. I mean, you know, double E, and he was just such a dominant heel when he came in. But at the same time, you know, I don't think that they had many things with him. He actually had a match a Survivor Series or a SummerSlam. I don't remember exactly what it was, but it was supposed to be a triple threat match between Jeff Hardy, Triple H, and Kozlov. And and somehow Jeff Hardy got beat up, like kayfabe beat up at a hotel, and that's when Edge came back. It was Survivor Series, I believe it was. I don't remember exactly, but I'm almost positive it was Survivor Series. But Edge came back that match and returned and won the title. So it was 2008 Survivor Series, 2008 triple threat match. So yeah, so Survivor Series is one of the biggest pay-per-views of the year. Vladimir Kozlov has a match pay-per-view. However, yeah, after that, comedic team with Santino, and now he's gone. Next is the Brian Kendrick. I was really surprised that they actually tried to push him. I mean, his build, and they gave him some new music. He's real cocky. He had kind of like a Shawn Michaels, like a mini-me Shawn Michaels type of feel to him. Ezekiel Jackson, he debuted at that time, too. He was his bodyguard. He was actually an unofficial world heavyweight champion. If you don't remember, he was in the championship scramble, the one and only championship scramble match. I don't remember everybody who was in there. I know it was Batista. Chris Jericho won. I believe Finley was in there. Brian Kendrick. I believe it was seven people altogether. Brian Kendrick actually won a fall. So at the end, there was a time frame. At the end, whoever was a champ, you know, won. Whoever was the end. Who was the champion at the end was basically the official champion of the match. But basically, you won a fall. You know, you won, you know, the fall to have, you know, to be the last person to win a fall before the time is up. So it was an interesting concept. I liked it. I'm wondering why. I mean, I don't know if it bombed, you know, as far as ratings is concerned. I don't remember the ratings of that pay-per-view, but I think it was Unforgiven, if I'm not mistaken. But it was a good concept. Brian Kendrick actually won one of those falls. I mean, officially he was unofficially he was the world heavyweight champion. But that didn't last long, of course. Muhammad Hassan, he was someone who was just basically being pushed to the moon. You know, of course he had the manager, you know, with him that was popular, and Sheik Abdur Bashir in TNA, and of course Daivari Khosrow or Sean Daivari in the WWE. So he managed Hassan. He was actually groomed to defeat The Undertaker at a pay-per-view, but because of some media stuff at the time, they basically had to end his character, and I think he got Tombstone on the ramp, and basically that was on like an episode of SmackDown, if I'm not mistaken. That was basically the end of his character. Eric Escobar, he was really good in the FCW, but stayed there for a while. They tried to call him up and have him be managed by Vicky Guerrero. I mean, it didn't work at all. Even with Vicky Guerrero heat, it didn't work at all. So he was gone. Chris Masters, another one, had a very theatrical entrance, great push, and then he just became nobody. He became American Adonis for the Ring Ka King, TNA's umbrella pay-per-view in India. Not pay-per-view, but promotion in India, Ring Ka King. Had some type of makeshift tag team with Carlito for a second. Went against Big Show and Kane at a WrestleMania. It's probably the best thing that happened for him. And then lastly, Big Daddy V. Of course, Viscera, Big Vis, so on and so forth, Men on a Mission, Mabel. He had a resurgence of a feud, resurgence of a character in ECW's real dominant, managed by Matt Stryker, but of course that didn't last long. So real quick here, TLC, Big Show and Sheamus. I'm going with Big Show for the chairs match. Don't see Sheamus winning. Kofi Kingston, I believe he will keep it against Wade Barrett. They're going to continue to build that. Going with Dolph Ziggler still for the Money in the Bank contract.